justice for all.
Thank you, Heather. Could I have a roll call, please?
Commissioner Ward.
Present.
Commissioner Schmidt.
Present.
Commissioner Moreno.
Here.
Commissioner Bentz.
Present.
Commissioner Sturdivant.
Here.
Chairperson Jack.
Here.
All present.
Thank you, Suzanne. Could I have a motion for approval of the agenda, please?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please, Suzanne. Second was David Benz.
Commissioner Moreno?
Yes.
Commissioner Bentz?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Abstain.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Chairperson Jack?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0-1.
Thank you. Okay, it's now time for our public comment portion. This portion of the meeting is reserved for persons wishing to address the commission on any matter not on the agenda and over which the commission has jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes. Is there anyone wishing to speak this evening? Seeing none, bring it back to the commission. Are there any planning commission business now? The first thing is the administration of the oath of office to our newest commissioner to be.
I, Lynn Colamarino. Oh, I'll raise my right hand, too. Excuse me.
Do solemnly swear
that I will support and defend
the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United
States. Discharge the duties of the office.
Discharge the duties of the office
for which I'm about to enter.
Thank you.
Commissioner Colamarino. Commissioner Colamarino, would you wait out there for us, please? We're going to do a group picture here. So if the rest of the commissioners would join me in front of the dais.
Okay,
the next item of business on the agenda is election of chairperson and vice chairperson. I'd entertain a motion if there's...
I move that we nominate Sandy Jack for a position of chairperson.
Second.
All those in favor? Or you'll do a roll call. I'm sorry. Get ahead of myself here. Vice Chairperson. Thank you,
Mr. Chairman, I would like to nominate Commissioner Moreno for Vice Chair.
I second that.
Motion by Commissioner Benz, seconded by Commissioner Sturdivant, to nominate Heather Moreno as Vice Chairperson. Commissioner Benz?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Commissioner Cola Moreno?
Yes.
Commissioner Moreno?
Yes.
Chairperson Jack?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda is a consent calendar. Is there anyone either from the commission that wants to pull an item? Anyone from the public that wants to pull an item? Seeing none, could I have an appropriate motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of items 1 and 2 on the consent calendar.
Second.
Suzanne?
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes.
Commissioner Benz?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes.
Commissioner Cola Moreno?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Chairperson Jack?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
Thank you. Now, Warren, is this the appropriate place for the PowerPoint? Or did you have that? Okay.
No, we'll do that as part of the staff report under the hearing.
Okay, very good. Thank you. The next item, community development staff report, which is item number 3, PLN 2009, tree removal permit for 7405 Del Rio Road. Can I have a staff report, please?
Good evening, commissioners. Our first item tonight is going to be a tree removal permit. It's at 7405 Del Rio Road. This is a map of the proposed project site. It's at the corner of Alturas and Del Rio Road. It's a general plan designation of rural estates, and zoning district is residential suburban. The site is about right at the corner of that. There are some other improvements that are proposed to the house, but no trees will be removed for those improvements, and the permits will come in for those at a later date. The tree protection plan and your staff reports analyze the future improvements as well as the foundation repair, but tonight we're just looking at the foundation repair and the tree that needs to be removed to do that work. The tree will be mitigated per the requirements of the Atascadero Native Tree Ordinance. There will be fees paid into the mitigation fund of $233.33, or the applicant can choose to replant trees on site. If the applicant chooses to replant, it'll be five-gallon native trees. Those conditions are included in your resolution. And the finding tonight for the Planning Commission would be that the tree is interfering with existing utilities and/or structures as certified by a report from the site planner. And tonight, staff is recommending that the Planning Commission adopt the resolution in your packets, subject to the proposed conditions. And that concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you. Before we have any questions, let's do our ex parte on this. And might as well start with, to my right, Commissioner Schmidt.
I have no ex parte reportings, please.
Okay.
I have none.
No ex parte.
None.
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 Thank you. Are there any questions of staff? Seeing none, could I have an appropriate motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt Resolution PC 2009-0004 to allow the removal of one live oak totaling 28 inches DBH and in accordance with the conditions in the report.
I'll second the motion.
Suzanne?
Commissioner Benz?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Chairperson Jack?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
Okay. Now, we have item number four coming up, and I believe, Commissioner Schmidt, you have...
Yes.
Next item would be ex parte on item number four, and this time we'll start from the left and move to the right. Commissioner Ward, anything to report?
No.
Commissioner Colomarino?
I have none.
Commissioner Benz?
None.
None for myself? Oh, yeah. Wait a minute. Correction. I visited the project. Did not talk to anyone about it at the site.
I visited as well, but no ex parte.
And I visited as well, but there didn't speak to anybody.
Thank you.
Perhaps I should add, I also visited it. I didn't regard it as a potential issue of ex parte, but I'll add that fact.
Well, that it's an optional on visitations. Okay. Thank you.
As I understand it, it's not a requirement as long as you don't speak to someone while you're visiting there.
Yeah. Correct. At this time, could I have a staff report, please? Or?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. Callie Taylor is the project planner on this, so I'll make most of the presentation, but I'm just going to do a quick little overview of the item just to get us kind of off to a good start here, hopefully. So this project, West Front Village, is actually a project that was approved by the City Council back in 2005. Originally, it was a general plan amendment with this plan development overlay. What we're going to be looking at tonight is amending the original plan development overlay, as well as what's called the master plan of development and the underlying tentative map. So the Planning Commission's role tonight, because we're changing the zoning ordinance again, is you're acting as an advisory body to the City Council. So there's no final decisions that are going to be made tonight. What you're going to do is run this like a regular meeting where you'll take testimony, make a decision, but your decision's going to be on what your recommendation is to the City Council. They'll take the final action on this project in March. You'll handle this like any other hearing item. You'll have the ability to either recommend approval, recommend denial. If you needed more information, you could refer it back to staff for further further analysis as well. The conditions of approval for the three items, the commission can make recommended changes to those conditions of approval. So that's one of your options. And then whatever your final action is tonight or recommendation, that'll be incorporated into the City Council staff reports. A couple new commissioners up here. So typically what we do is we'll do the staff presentation, the PowerPoint, which Callie will do next here. After we're done with the PowerPoint, that would be a good opportunity for the Planning Commission to ask any clarifying questions of staff. But it isn't the time to start deliberating or debating the merits of the project. You should start out by just trying to make sure you understand all the issues clearly. Once we're done just clarifying questions to staff, it's typically at that point we open the public comment portion, and the applicant usually speaks first. It's given as much time as they need to make their presentation. That's also a time to ask questions and clarifications of the applicant. After that, we open it to the general public, allow them to make their statements, are limited to 3 minutes. If we have questions of the public, you can ask those as well. At that point, we'll close the public comment, and that usually is the end of public comment, unless later in the hearing the Planning Commission decides you want to reopen it. And if we reopen it, you have to reopen it to everyone. So keep that in mind. At that point, this is the time where the Commission can begin their deliberation process. One thing we may want to consider is if there's a lot of issues that need to be deliberated, you might want to just start kind of by just discussing what the issues are you want to discuss, and then we can hopefully kind of focus those into a more organized manner so we can get everything clearly addressed. The commission then, once you're done with your deliberations, will make a motion. Staff's here to help you. If there's questions, if there's clarification, if you're not sure what resolution that a motion needs to, or a change needs to be made to, just ask Callie or I. We will help you with it. If we actually need to take a break just to clarify some stuff, we can do that as well before we make the final motion. And then we'll make a final motion and take a vote on that. So that's kind of a little overview of, you know, how we'd recommend you kind of approach this item tonight.
Thank you, Warren.
And with
that,
I'll turn it over to Callie.
All right. So next we're going to take a look at the project location. It's located on the corner of Portola and West Front Road. The project site is off of Coromar Court, which is where the residential units are, and the commercial are located off of West Front Road. The commercial units here are zoned commercial retail, and included a commercial component with retail, a gas station, and a fast food with drive-through. And that was about 10,000 square feet. There was a hotel, a business park component, and two parts of the residential. There was the courtyard residential and the duplex. And in order to approve this project originally, included the general plan amendment, zone change, plan development number 23 overlay, which is the creation of a new plan development, tentative track map, conditional use permit, which is what we call the master plan of development that locks in the site design. And then there was that conceptual five-lot future family single-family subdivision. This is a drawing of the original master plan of development. Everything here in the light green is included in the master plan. So here up near West Front, we have the hotel, the original restaurant building, and then this was a gas station and fast food building that was connected. It was to be built over the lot line, with the lot line going between the gas station and the restaurant drive-through. The residential component is located here on the back side. These are the duplex units, and these are the courtyard single family. And then the business component, business park component, is located off a private driveway on the other side of the project. The original track map was recorded in April of 2007, so those lots were actually recorded and all finalized at this point. Subdivision improvement permit was issued in 2007, and the applicant has installed sidewalks, curbs, the drainage basins, and most of the utilities on site. So most of that has been completed. The Holiday Inn Express was also constructed and opened last year, and in August of last year, there was another amendment that was done for the Jack in the Box on the site, and that was the amendment that separated the gas station from the drive-through building. So now those are two separate buildings to be built out on site. The permits are ready for the Jack in the Box to be picked up, but we do not have permits in for the other retail buildings on the site. These are some photos of what's currently out there on site. This is the residential cul-de-sac, and you can see the utilities out here have been stubbed out at the front of each unit. This is the Holiday Inn Express and one of the commercial sites at the corner of Portola and West Front. So tonight we're going to be looking at a number of different things that are being proposed to be amended. We have amendments to commercial lot 2, which is the lot here in the center, and also the original courtyard units. The floor plans on the courtyard units would stay the same, but the elevations would change to reflect a Mission Revival style. There's also a zone text change and amendments to the conditions of approval that are proposed. Here we see a more detailed drawing of the changes to the residential portion. So this is where we're talking about the revised site plan for the residential lots 1 through 18. In the original site plan, they had these long shared driveways that went to attached garages in the back, and then the duplex units were at the front of the unit, or at the front of the lot. The cul-de-sac went most of the way towards the back of the project, and then there were some smaller driveways that led off of that. In the revised site plan, they propose to leave the cul-de-sac as it's been installed and do a, like a, sort of a loop driveway that goes around to units 11 through 18 off the back. Most of these units will be single family. Lots 1 through 12 are all single family. And these are small lots, so they're designed with tandem garages. So they're long, narrow garages. And then lots 13 through 18 are still designed as duplex units. These are some drawings of the proposed elevations that the applicant has provided. The elevations are more of a Mission Revival architectural style. And what that means is that they have stucco walls, tile roofs, there's a lot of recessed arches, tile accents, and a lot of wood accents, such as wood headers above the windows. These are some examples of other Mission Revival style architecture to give you an idea of the type of look that the applicant has been going for as part of this revision. The applicant has also provided a proposed color board, and there was a color copy in your packets, and then I also gave Commissioner Jack the actual sample so that you can take a look at that if you want clarification of the exact colors. The color of the stucco on the walls is more of an off-white color. There's a couple variations of that, and then the trim colors are going to be in a dark brown, and there's a few different brown colors that they proposed. There's also some trim around the windows and in the recessed arches that they proposed in a different color. And right now they're more of pretty bright colors than the blue, green, yellow, and kind of a pink color. And staff has conditioned that the applicant revise these as part of the building permits to reflect more of a traditional Mission income units. And the council policy on this is that the affordable units shall be distributed throughout the project site and not concentrated in one location. That's the standard council policy when it comes to affordable and deed restricted units. What the applicant has requested in this case is to deed restrict the duplex units at the back of the project as the affordable. And it's staff's recommendation on this that we don't go against council policy and we actually leave the condition as it was originally done, and that would say that all units shall be distributed throughout the project subject to staff approval. We also wanted to clarify the workforce housing condition. There actually aren't any changes proposed to this condition and no changes have been made, but we did want to clarify what this means because I know it can be kind of a confusing condition when we look at this. What the condition says is that the applicant will enter into an agreement with the city to reserve half the units for sale to residents and workers within the city of Atascadero. And what this requires is when we're doing the final map, the applicant enters into the agreement, like it says, and they usually are required to like advertise in a local newspaper or do something to kind of get the word out there to local residents that these units are for sale. The city requires that the applicant make a good faith, reasonable effort to sell the units to local residents and workers. However, that's about as far as the city goes to follow up on this. We don't actually go in and force that they continue to be maintained by local residents or workers. It's really a reasonable, good faith effort that the developer has to make. So next we move on to the commercial lots. And on this we're looking at revisions to lot 2 of the commercial. And that's the center lot here up on the site plan. So the Jack in the Box is here to the right and the original restaurant building is on lot 3. Lot 2 was originally the gas station building. And instead of the gas station, the applicant has proposed this commercial retail building, which could be divided up into 4 different tenants. The redesigned site plan meets all of the parking requirements of the code, and they have also provided a revised landscape plan. And there's also a lot line adjustment on this that's part of the track map for the residential, and that's basically just to straighten out the lot lines on the side to follow the proposed parking plan. The applicant has proposed it's 1 and 2 of the commercial, and staff believes that this is a consistent condition. We are supporting this change. And that is included in your attached resolutions. Another conditions that is proposed to be changed is the Caltrans landscaping. And the original condition said that the landscaping of Caltrans right-of-way shall be required. And the applicant has found that it's very difficult to install landscaping within the Caltrans right-of-way, and instead is proposing it from the west front edge of west front road up to the Caltrans right-of-way, up to that gate or that metal fencing along Caltrans. And this is a drawing of the proposed landscape plan, which has been included in the resolution. There aren't any changes to the mitigation measures, and this may seem a little bit odd if you're going through the resolution and you see original mitigation measures that relate to the gas station or other air quality type mitigation measures. And this is because mitigation measures are actually part of the CEQA document. So in order to change those, we have to repost the CEQA document for a 30-day public review, and it takes quite a bit of time to process that and to have it reviewed by all the agencies. So we've gone ahead and left the mitigation measures in there. Some of them no longer apply because the gas station's been removed, but it's fine to go ahead and leave them in there as they were originally adopted. The next part of this project tonight is the Plan Development 23 zone text change. And what that includes is an actual amendment to the text of the municipal code. So the Plan Development 23 has specific requirements about the lot layout, the parking, and all the other parts of the project or the master plan of development. So what we've proposed is a change to the garage and parking requirements in order to make the code, the actual text of the municipal code, consistent with this new project. So the text here on the screen that you have in your staff report reflects that change. A tentative track map is also proposed as part of the project, and this was, is actually a full new map. It's not an amendment to the old map because the old map has actually been finaled already. So these lots have actually been created and recorded at the county. What the applicant is proposing to do is just amend the lot lines of the original map. It has the same number of lots. We're still looking at 18. They were previously duplex lots, now single family. And then the one commercial retail lot where the lot lines will just be adjusted. Modifications that you want to discuss and make into a list. The commission may determine that more information is needed and may refer the item back to staff, or the commission may recommend that the city council deny the project. If the planning commission chooses to adopt the resolutions that are in your packets, there are a few condition changes that have been included. One of those is the text of the plan development. There's a small change in there that the driveway guest parking spaces be included only on lots 1 through 18. There actually isn't room on the original courtyard lots to provide the guest parking space in the driveway. The other ones are fairly minor conditions to be changed. Number 6A is a new condition that says any conditions that were changed with previous project amendments or were previously installed with approved permits will be allowed to remain as installed. Traffic mitigation condition number 35 was actually amended with a prior 2008 amendment, so that one is proposed to remain as previously amended. And condition number 77 was already taken care of, and that was regarding the uses within the retail development. These are a few other conditions that need to be changed. Regarding the landscaping, a 1-foot landscape planter with shrubs shall be provided between all pavement and proposed fencing. The condition regarding turf block is no longer needed because those lots have been revised and there's no longer a need for this because of the redesign. The other ones are fairly minor, and let's see, condition number 11. The paving in the front on Coromar Court shall be extended as shown in your exhibits. There was previously a condition that it go to the first driveway. And condition number 37, we've amended that to say that the travel lanes shall be as shown in the approved building permits. And tonight the staff is recommending that the Planning Commission approve the attached resolutions subject to the conditions that I just went over. And the applicant is here. If you have any questions, that concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you, Kelly. At this point in time, do any of the commissioners have any questions for staff? Commissioner Marino?
I can't read that far.
Sorry. We're suggesting traffic mitigation condition number 35. It was actually revised with an amendment in 2008. So the applicant actually came back in 2008, asked the Planning Commission, and they changed this condition. So we're saying that whatever was approved with that amendment stay in place. It was actually an amendment that was done last summer, and it specifically regarded that median in Portola.
So that's being removed then?
Yes, exactly. Okay. The amended condition will replace that.
Okay. And then the gas station needs to stay in there. Okay. On page 91, the part regarding the workforce housing, and I understand the 60-day issue. The second bullet point, though, and I know we always have this in here, it doesn't end up being meaningful at all, and I'm wondering, is that something that's just part of what the council's put together in the past, and we can't take that out? But the part about the applicant shall provide reasonable proof to the city that at least one of the qualified buyers is a resident or worker within the city limits of Atascadero, that may or may not happen, so we're not actually requiring that they come with that proof. Why do we keep that in there?
Well, that is kind of standard language that the council developed a number of years ago, so we continue to carry it forward. We're fairly flexible in our interpretation. We're just looking for a good faith effort in terms of advertising it locally and trying to make the units available. But it isn't, set in stone.
I know. I guess I would just prefer it if it's something that can't be removed. I understand. I just would prefer that isn't in there, since it's something that's not actually enforced. It just ends up being meaningless, I guess.
And if you want to make that recommendation, that's totally appropriate.
Okay. And then I have a question. What is condition of approval 24? The project applicant may apply for a reimbursement map for off-site circulation improvements made to the Santa Rosa US 101. Could you explain a little bit about what that is? Is that within all of the changes that they do need to make, if they end up making something that they're not responsible for, the city reimburses them? What exactly is that?
That has to do with the signal lights that were installed at the Santa Rosa Freeway interchange. So this project has paid the full cost of putting those signal lights in. Survey and make sure, we can justify why we're including certain parcels.
Okay. And let's see. Just to clarify, the issue with the PD-23 and changing it to having in the garage, if they have the tandem garages, and that still is going to house two vehicles, the change is because of the guest parking is going to be in the driveway. Is that why that change? I'm not clear on that.
Let me pull up the original condition. Okay, the original text is on page 60 of your staff reports, and what the original text did was it actually had specific dimensions for the size of the garage. So since we're now looking at tandem garages for most of those units, and we're also looking at only one-car garages for the duplex units, it doesn't meet those dimensions. Let's see, it also says,
and we didn't just take out it wasn't just the dimensions, but it was the adding in either with garage or driveway.
Yes, exactly. So they'll all still provide two parking spaces, but one of them may be in the driveway and one of them may be in the garage. And those that do have the two-car garages will also provide one space in the driveway. The site plan has been designed to provide that.
And would that be considered the guest parking space then?
It is, yes.
Okay.
And then as part of that, since the duplex units only have one-car garages, they need to make up the extra parking to meet the multifamily requirements, and those are provided in that separate little parking lot off the loop driveway.
Okay. Thanks, Kelly.
Commissioner Benz?
Yes. Kelly, on page 61, under the tentative tract map, the last sentence says, the applicant will be required to establish a community facilities district prior to recordation of the final map. Does that mean that the right-of-way maintenance and the maintenance of the landscaping for the project itself could be put into a community facilities district where the city doesn't have to pay for it?
The community facility district will only deal with police and fire.
You mentioned in the staff report condition 14, and then you mentioned also that there's a standard council policy. And I didn't see anywhere exactly what that policy is or how it's expressed. Do you have it somewhere, or can you?
I do. I have a copy that's printed out that I can pass around to everybody. Let me read you the text on that policy. Okay, what the policy says exactly is that the affordable units shall be distributed throughout the project site and not concentrated in one location. So that's the highlighted portion on this. I'll go ahead and pass that around. So that's included on the council policy, and then it's also a condition of the project.
So that is the entire statement of the policy?
It is. There. Yeah, those two pages are the whole policy.
And then do you have a specific proposal for how you think the applicant should do that?
We're not very specific on it in the council policy. I think that if the planning commission or the city council wanted to be more specific, you could do that and include that within the condition. What staff would do if we looked at this would just say that it has to be throughout the project. So our understanding of that would be that it would be a few of each type of unit so that you don't have them all clustered within one area.
So I believe there are six units in this project, is that right? So what you're saying is then some of them would have to be in the non-duplex units, the regular courtyard or the regular units, and then what about the courtyard units?
The courtyard units are also part of that calculation, so there would need to be some distributed, I think, throughout the entire area. It's another thing to think about on this is that we have three moderate units. I believe it's two low income and one very low. So they're all different price ranges on these. So if the applicant wanted to, he could distribute those throughout however he chose.
So then what you're proposing is that the applicant come back with a proposal for how it would meet this requirement. Is that right?
He could actually do it at final map. That's when the deed restriction is required. And as long as it met staff's interpretation, we would accept that. If Planning Commission
own authority.
By requesting the change, you're basically putting that into the resolution. What we'll do is take this resolution to the City Council as your recommendation. So if you want to change it, you could do that. But it will be up to the City Council to actually change the policy.
Right. And then the staff would only ask the developer to comply with that condition because the staff can't change that condition either. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And so at some point in time, the developer would have to come back with a set of plans that would show how they were going to build those units and not have them clustered.
What they would do is when they're doing their final map, that's when we typically check for this condition. It's actually a standard condition that we put on all plan developments. And it just says that they'll be distributed throughout the project. When they come in for their final map, they'll tell us which units they want to de-district, and as long as staff feels that they're equally distributed, we'll go ahead and approve it as they proposed. So it won't actually come back to Planning Commission at all.
And the conditions of approval state that in this document. Staff is still holding them to that requirement.
That is the way that it's stated right now.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes, can affordable housing, I was reading in applicant's statement that he's talking about renting them. Is that something that can be done with affordable housing, or is it purchased, you know, like a, you know, outright, or how is that handled?
It can either be rented or it can be sold. All we do is the county actually puts out the numbers, and they say what it can be sold at or what it can be rented at. And then those are all divided into the moderate, low and very low income groups. And they can choose to do whichever they like.
Continue.
I had one other question in regards to the Caltrans, the planting in the right-of-way. From what I read, it seemed like there was, if I understood it correctly, it was that the applicant was responsible for 2 years to take care of the plantings. And after that, I was a little unclear as to how that worked out.
What the applicant has requested is that they are responsible to maintain it for only 2 years. And that would require a condition change in two places. It would be part of the resolution that we would have to change it, and it would also be in the actual PD 23 requirements. It says in that the applicant shall maintain all of the project landscaping in perpetuity.
Open it up to presentation from the applicant. Mr. Shannon.
Good evening, Honorable Commission and staff. Richard Shannon. I'm one of the partners of West Front Village. We've been developers on this project for about, I guess, since 2003. We've been working on this. So, couple things, you know, I want to thank staff. We've been working with them for about 8 months on these revisions you're looking at. We've been through numerous drawings and shovel holes and trying to make things work. I'm sure you guys are, I don't need to remind you that we're probably in the worst economic times of our lifetime. So it's very difficult to develop anything right now. It's tough. And part of what we're asking for tonight and some of the things I want to bring up to your attention are because of the economic times, and then also from some things that were previously done on this project that need to be clarified, okay? First of all, housing sector has been hit harder than any other sector of our economy. You know, our prices have dropped a good 35 to 45% across the board over the last couple years. This has made it extremely difficult to build anything. The fees have not gone down. In fact, they're going up. And at the same time, we're trying to build something and somehow, at the end of the day, come out with a little profit. It is extremely difficult, and you can see that in the number of building permits you're issuing at the city. And so we're dealing with it. We are lucky enough that we have an exceptional, nice piece of property. We bent over backwards to sell off the parcel to the Holiday Inn. We gave it to them at an extremely cheap price so that they would build there and the city would benefit from that. So we've been working with the city extensively trying to make this project happen. As developers now, we need a little bit of flexibility. And what we're asking is just really, other in the staff report, there's only three items that are of concern to us, okay? One item is the conditions of the landscaping that you just talked about on the Caltrans landscaping. And I have to correct a little bit because we went through all this, and I don't know if Callie was here. But when we got our previous project approved, at that time we had agreed with the city, and the city agreed with us, that we would maintain the landscaping within the Caltrans right-of-ways with it for a two-year period. That would give us enough time to plant drought-tolerant plants. Caltrans came back and said, we want you to maintain 20 years on our stuff, and we said, hey, we're stuck here. We have a problem. We no longer own one of these parcels. They do not agree to maintain for 20 years, and we've sold off these properties with recorded documents that say 2 years. So we worked with staff and came up with an alternative that we thought would be acceptable is landscape that little buffer strip in there, which is on city property, it turns out, not Caltrans property. And again, we would maintain it for a two-year period per our recorded documents. And then after that, the maintenance is going to be up to the city or whoever. And we ask that that is condition number 12 in your documents and also part of the CCNRs. And we need to ask that that be amended so that that can be limited to the two-year period, just for the landscape buffer that's off-site. And if you go back, and I'm sure Warren has those CCNR documents, Those are all recorded and previously approved, and we're just asking to extend that two-year period, and that's it. Okay? On the second item we're asking for a little assistance on is the affordable housing element. And there's a couple items that we'd like to address on the affordable housing item, and one of them we didn't actually get into our application, and I apologize about that. The first one is we don't know what we're going to be able to do out here for the affordable housing. We may wind up selling the units. We may have to keep them as rentals to make the thing work. We don't know for sure yet today. It's a very tough economic time. A lot of things are going to depend on what the bank allows us to do and things of that nature. Currently, the way your housing ordinance is written and with the dollar amounts that are allowed through the county provides the dollar amounts for both the rentals and the sales, it's actually more feasible for us to rent the housing. Now, that changes every time the interest rate changes, but that's the current market. So one of our problems is keeping, if we're going to keep the housing units as rental housing, we need to have them clustered. It doesn't work to have a series of rental houses scattered throughout a development because you have management and maintenance nightmares. It works to have them clustered together so you can have an efficiency of management. And the just so you know, the council has in the past granted exceptions to this policy, and they would have to grant an exception here. And how many of you have been through Apple Valley development? Can I see a raise of hands? Has anybody been through Apple Valley, the Midland Pacific project on Del Rio? Okay, the low-income housing in that project is clustered. So it was granted before, it's done, you don't even see it, just so you know. So we're not asking for anything that hasn't been done before, we're not even sure we're going to do it. We're asking for the flexibility to be allowed to do it. The other item that we wanted to bring up is, in our condition, the way it was written originally, we had to build the units. And we are asking you to allow us to present to the council that we may want to mix in lieu fees and construction of units together so that we can make this thing work. Okay? And then the last item we have, which is just really a cleanup item, is in our first approval, we had a lot of the same map conditions that you had brought up here earlier about having the facility district in place and CCNRs and homeowners association all in place prior to recordation of the final map. We've actually recorded our final map. That current map is recorded already. In order to do that, we did not have a facility district in place. We didn't have a homeowners association in place because we don't have any housing yet. What we did do, we came to an agreement with the city that we would record, and which we have recorded, a deferral agreement for the housing and for the facility district and for the housing for the homeowners association. And those units, those items will be completed prior to completion of any of the residential homes. That's what our recorded deferral agreement says. And we just need to, I've read through this document numerous times, and I can't tell for sure whether or not we're allowed to do that again or not. We are asking that we be allowed to continue that deferral agreement because putting those conditions on the as a condition of the final map is another burden which is very difficult to overcome right now considering all the factors that we've dealt with. So we just ask that we be allowed the same deferral agreement that we were already allowed. And I don't know how you would word that or if it needs to be worded anyway. So those are the items that we have have come to. The staff has brought up the color selections on the units, and we are have no problem working with staff on the colors for the units. I think between the two of us, we can work. Our idea is to have, those of you who know me, I've only done quality developments throughout the community. I try to reach for upper-end stuff that looks nice. You can see by the Holiday Inn there. And I want this housing project to be a very nice, excellent-looking housing project. And so I'm willing to work with staff on the colors to make sure that they're all in line and everything. So we don't have any problems with any of the other things, items here. I do have my engineer here, Russ Thompson, who's our civil engineer. If you guys have any questions for him, I'd be glad to answer.
Could you,
Where'd he go? Could you elaborate on the deferral agreement? I wasn't completely clear on that. That has to do, is it with the CFD?
Yeah, there's a facilities district that has to be created for the residential homes, and that has to do with paying for police and fire protection.
Right.
Once you establish the facility district, you have to start paying into it. And it wasn't, in our opinion, it wasn't fair that we have to start paying a facility district fee for houses that aren't there. But at the same time, we wanted to record our map so that we could sell off the parcel to the Holiday Inn and let them build the Holiday Inn.
Okay.
So we worked out a deferral agreement with the city where basically we agreed that prior to any occupancy of any residential homes, that facility district would be in place. I think actually it's prior to construction, it may read. But it's a recorded deferral agreement. It's already been, it was drafted by our attorneys, approved by city attorneys, and recorded. And that allowed us to record the map as you see it now.
And it's not impacted at all by the commercial development. It's only based on the residential.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Any other? Commissioner Colomarino?
Mr. Shannon, I'm a little confused about the first point that you were discussing regarding the landscaping matter. Now, you said that you sold a parcel and that there were recorded documents, and in those documents it said that you would only have to maintain the landscaping in the Caltrans right-of-way, is that right, for 2 years? Did I get that right?
I believe it was, the way the documents I believe were written was any off-site landscaping would have to be maintained for a 2-year period. And so it was anything that was off our site. And that would reference whether it was city or Caltrans or whatever. And those, like I said, those documents are recorded. They were approved again by the city, drawn by our attorneys, approved by the city, and recorded. And our agreements were with the city that we would only maintain for 2 years when we started the whole thing. That's the way it's been all along.
But then you say Caltrans came back and said 2 years would not work for Caltrans and they require 20 years.
I believe it was 20 years. It was 20 or 30, I can't remember. But we went back at that time and reviewed our documents, met with our attorneys, met with the parcel people that bought the Holiday Inn, and they said, no, we're not changing the documents. And the attorney said, you can't do that.
In the recorded documents? I'm confused.
The recorded documents refer strictly to our properties that we own.
Yes.
So, and what they refer to is there's provisions in the recorded documents for maintaining the off-site landscaping for a 2-year period, and that's it. Beyond that 2-year period, there is no provision to maintain anything off-site. And so when Caltrans came back and asked for a 20-year or 30-year period, whatever it was, for maintenance, at that point, we had CC&R documents that were in conflict with Caltrans. Basically, we couldn't landscape their property at that point. And so we said, we went back to the city and said, hey, you guys conditioned us that we landscape this area. We really can't do it because our documents conflict with what Caltrans wants. And therefore, we came up with the mitigation measure of let's landscape this strip in between, which happens to be on city property, and we'll go in there and heavily landscape that so that it'll have a nice appearance and we can step around Caltrans at that point.
Okay, so where does this leave the party to whom you sold the parcel that you referred to?
Holiday Inn Group?
Yes.
It's also a Jack in the Box property. We're in escrow with them that they'll be closing here in a week, I think. So we're going to have two people. As long as we limit the landscape maintenance to 2 years, that is in conformance with our recorded documents. And we're talking about off-site maintenance.
So then are you saying that they are subject to the landscaping requirements?
They have to contribute. They have to pay pay us to help maintain those properties for 2 years.
So that's really the problem. Then you're only going to get money from them for 2 years, and then you're on your own with respect to – okay, now I understand. All right.
Well, and it's actually it's conflicting with our documents. It doesn't legally – we couldn't even agree to do it, is what our attorney told us.
You couldn't agree to do what?
To pay for 20 years of maintenance. because the way the documents are written, all the parcels, the commercial parcels, have to contribute to the off-site improvements, but only for a two-year period. So we can't commit for somebody else, is what our attorney told us.
Okay.
I know it's confusing.
It is confusing, yes, and I think maybe the city attorney may need to weigh in on this too, but anyway.
Or fertilizing occasionally, right?
Yeah, well, paying the water bill, and the maintenance will be paying the water bill and putting the plants, replacing plants that die, and fertilizing and pulling weeds, yes.
Okay, because what I read here was that the city doesn't have the money to maintain that after 2 years, even though it's going to be city-owned property, right?
That's what they are saying, yes. Although the idea is that when we originally met with the project, the idea was that we would install the water system for a two-year period. All the plants would be drought-resistant. After a two-year period, the water system would be cut off, and basically the maintenance at that point would be whacking weeds and trimming a tree up here and there.
So basically after 2 years, they don't need the irrigation?
That's correct.
Okay, so you're not having any trees, you're just having drought-resistant shrubs?
I think they're drought-resistant shrubs and bushes, I believe.
Okay.
Commissioner Benz?
Yes, this is a question for staff. I understand what they're talking about here, but let me ask you about Caltrans right-of-ways that are not involved with this site. Who's responsible for that maintenance, Caltrans?
Caltrans is responsible for the maintenance in the right-of-ways, but they have ultimate say on what's in the right-of-way. And because they have so many outstanding maintenance liabilities they can't maintain right now, they are very resistant to letting anything new be put in their right-of-way. So that's where we get to the point where if you want to plant a tree in their right-of-way, you got to go through all these agreements. And what we've discovered as we went through the agreement is that it's really, really hard to plant a tree in their right-of-way. And that's where the 20-year, maintenance issue came up and where we finally just got to a point where it just wasn't even possible for this project to plant a couple trees in the right-of-way. And that's where now we've come to this fallback position is let's stay out of the right-of-way because that's too complicated an issue and just landscape that strip. And the applicant's right. Originally, there was this two-year agreement, and the purpose was is we were going to plant a couple oak trees, let them naturalize, and be done with it. The situation's a little different because now we got a narrow strip right along the road, and if the applicant's not maintaining it, then clearly Public Works has to maintain it. Public Works is resistant to taking on a new maintenance responsibility as well. So that's kind of where we get into an area where there isn't really a good solution. There are, good points from everybody's point of view, but it is.
Thank you, Warren. Any other questions? Commissioner Sturdivant?
Hey, Mr. Shannon, could you clarify about the, it was the in-lieu fees and construction costs, or there was something, I'm not familiar with that. Could you, you were talking about getting some.
On the affordable housing?
No, actually, it was after that. It was, I don't know, maybe that is. Maybe that was it. Yes.
Yeah, that has to do with the affordable housing.
Okay, yes.
In the affordable housing policy, which you guys have a copy of, which is it's a policy, I guess. It's not actually a general plan ordinance or anything. There's a reference that projects of 11 or more units must build units or receive council approval to pay in-lieu fees. And the in-lieu fees would be calculated based on a formula that's on the back page here. And what that does is that gives you some flexibility if for some reason the prices for the affordable units goes up and down with interest rates. And so if interest rates were to rise substantially, the price of what you can sell or lease an affordable unit for drops drastically. And at a certain point, it becomes such a huge loss that you cannot afford to build them. And so built into the system is a alternative where you pay fees to a building fund that the city has, which will someday help build affordable housing through other projects. And in our original wording, we didn't have that. It got left out. and we're asking that we be allowed that alternative. We have to present that to the council. It has to be approved by the council, but we're just asking that we be allowed that alternative per the policy.
Thank you.
Let me ask another question.
Commissioner Benz, go ahead.
Richard there. Richard, the deferral of fees, are you willing to pay that?
To pay the in-lieu fees?
Yes, the in-lieu fees.
We want to have the flexibility to do either or, which the policy states.
And so if you pay those fees, that goes into a housing fund in the city's side of the books, and they can construct those houses wherever they can find the land to do that, right?
I'm not sure what all they can do with the fees. Warren would have to answer that. But the fees would go into a fund, which they already have money in, and then they would have to use that somewhere in the city for housing.
Yes. Is that true, Warren?
Yeah, we have a restricted account. It goes in. It's purpose just for affordable housing projects. I don't know.
Thank you.
Any other?
Yes, I have a follow-up on that same subject there. If you have the option, what does that mean for the site plan? Right now, as I understand it, the duplex units will be the affordable units. Now, if you have the option to pay the in-lieu fees, does that mean you don't build the duplex units?
No, we would still build the duplex units. My thought would be at this current time, if the current market conditions stay just like they are, we would probably build the three moderate units or maybe four of the low-income units and then pay in-lieu fees for two more or something of that nature.
I see. So you would build them, but they just wouldn't be affordable units, and that would then affect the formula for your in-lieu fees too, because instead of six units, you'd now...
You might build four and then pay two in-lieu fees.
I see.
Something of that nature.
Okay.
And it's possible that we would pay all the in-lieu fees and not build any affordable. It all depends on the... we're probably looking, by the time we go to the commission, we go to the council and get approved and get our plans together, we'd be looking at the end of summer before we were starting to build anything, and whatever is going on with the market at that time would dictate which avenue we took.
So then you wouldn't have to commit until you built. Is that what you're proposing?
Yeah, we would probably have to commit prior to starting construction because we'd have to have our map finaled. And at the time you final the map, you have to designate which lots are going to be the affordable. So at the time we final the map, we would need to have designated which lots are going to be the affordable lots.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Commissioner Ward?
Yes, maybe this has been answered, but just for my own clarification, lot number 13 through 18 are the duplex, and they're all going to be in that affordable housing category. Is that correct?
Well, they don't have to be, but the current plan that we have submitted to the city spells out those six units being the affordable units and clustering together so that we can either sell them off or rent them or possibly pay the in-lieu fees.
Okay.
But the physical appearance of the units wouldn't change one way or the other. They would stay, even if they weren't affordable.
They may not take care of the maintenance and therefore would hurt the other houses next to it. I mean, is that your experience with this sort of thing?
Well, my concern has more to do with the cost. If you cluster the units together, you can have one landscape guy come in and maintain them all, and you can have one person maintain the group together. For management purposes, it's less cost than having them individual. In other words, if I have six units clustered together, I can get my management cost down to 3 or 4% a unit. If I spread them out as individual homes across the development, it's going to be 6 or 7% a unit. And so it has to do with the maintenance and the cost of management of the units, if we keep them as rentals. We want to have the option to keep it as rentals, and it works better if we cluster them, if we have that option. And like I said, I don't even know if I'm going to keep them as rentals, but I'd like to have the option.
Okay, but Could the city just say, the city council just say, well, that's the policy and not going to change it? So would you, if it came down to that, do you have the flexibility or do you have a plan B where you can intersperse these and still have it look good?
Yeah, if they turn us down, the plan won't change at all. We'll just take some of the other units, and there's some small units scattered throughout the project, and those would become the affordable units.
Okay.
So
so it wouldn't downgrade the whole look of the project?
No, it won't.
Okay. So the issue really is one of maintenance?
Maintenance and management if we keep them as rentals. The main issue is flexibility in today's market.
Okay.
And we need to have the flexibility of either being able to rent the units, pay the in-lieu fees, or sell them.
Sure.
And we need to have all three options on the table in order to get this development built. And that's the main issue.
Okay, because the homes that you're designating as the affordable housing, they're not in the most desirable location because they're stuck behind the Holiday Inn and they're right next to the building supply place. So that's probably the least desirable of the lots. So it kind of, I guess, it makes sense to have the low cost housing there, doesn't it?
Well, we went around and around on that, whether that's the least desirable or the best desirable. The layout of the land and the layout of the existing units, and the layout worked that way they fit. That's where they fit the best.
Okay. Commissioner Benz?
Yes. My understanding about cities and low and moderate income housing, cities have been dealing with low and moderate income housing for many, many years, and the clustering effect, the city has found it to create pockets of cancer in a community where you cluster all of the low and moderate income housing together, and when it starts to deteriorate, it really deteriorates and spread fast. So the thinking in today's time from a city standpoint is to spread those throughout the development so that you don't get all of the low and moderate income housing in one given area, so that the residents of the area where the low and moderate income housing have an impact on how fast those units deteriorate through peer pressure. And so cities have found that clustering does not work with low and moderate income housing, and I'm sure that's the reason the city wants to disperse the units throughout the project. And I think it's going to be awful hard for the city to change its mind.
Just comment, I agree with you when you get to a larger number of units. I think in our case we're talking about 6 units. And like if you go through Apple Valley, I think they have, they must have 7 or 8 affordable units in there clustered. There's no difference. I think when that policy was written, people were looking at, if I build 100 units and I got to have 20 affordable units, then I don't want them all together. So I think it was meant for larger projects.
Okay. Any other questions? I've got a question or two. They're a little different. And I'm really not even sure whether this was approved in the last one or not. That Tot Lot Park, is there anything that's been approved on that previously, Kelly?
There aren't any changes proposed to that, so it's proposed to stay exactly as it was originally approved.
Okay, thank you. What about the fencing, masonry wall or a brick wall that is there right now? There's a driveway with an open space near the drainage basin.
Yes.
Okay. And the question I've got, is there going to be a fence that connects of some sort across that area, or is it going to be the wall of a future construction for the restaurant or whatever?
It's not a wall. I believe there is a fence required there, Warren. Can you help me out with that? Because I really don't. I think there is a fence going He's been talking about between the future restaurant site and the tot lot detention basin.
Yeah, I think we're talking about
right there.
That line there.
Yep.
My recollection is I think it's like a tubular steel open fence type thing. So there's a fence, but it's transparent.
Some type of open fence, but there is
okay.
a fence.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Thank you. Do you anticipate any kind of an issue on the transition portion from the housing to the affordable? For example, lot 10 and 11? Is there, and that's just a 6-foot fence that runs between the two, correct?
Yeah, my okay. my anticipation is when that project's finished, you won't be able to tell the difference between the low income and the regular units.
Okay, okay. Oh, one other thing. What about the planting of a tree in this open area in the second cul-de-sac? I look from a shade standpoint in that, I would think it would be an attractive addition. I think you've got a shrub or a couple of shrubs.
I know I asked the landscape guy to heavily landscape that area so it would be a focal point at the end of the cul-de-sac, but to be honest with you, I don't know if we have a tree in there or not.
Right now there is not.
There is none?
None.
Okay.
There may I interrupt? There is a tree there, and we've also conditioned it for an oak tree of a certain size.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. There you
okay.
go.
Very good. Thank you, Kelly. Appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Shannon.
Part of our design was we wanted that to be a at the end of a cul-de-sac, that would be a really nicely landscaped focal point. So.
Yeah, it. Well, that's what came to mind, and I wasn't sure what I was looking at on the landscape plan.
Am I correct in understanding that you're prepared to meet all of those conditions except for the four items you brought up?
I think it was, three. We asked.
Three, and then the deferral agreement as well, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And the color you were willing to work?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mr. Shannon. At this point in time, is there anyone from the public that would care to comment on the project? Please approach the podium and state your name and where you're from.
Mr. Chairperson and Commissioners, my name is Linda and I live on Quezon Court.
Last name, please.
Hanson, H-A-N-S-O-N.
Thank you.
And I was at the first one in 05 when all of this started because of the big vacant lot. And if I could ask you to please repeat condition 11, all I heard was Quezon Court in that driveway.
Condition 11.
It's the one that comes out of the development. It's right across the street from the entrance onto our street.
Warren, is that the one on page 89?
I believe you mean the condition that we've suggested to be changed, and it's actually regarding Coromar Court, which is the street that this interior street right here is called Coromar Court. And what the was originally conditioned was that this decorative treatment came up to the first driveway. The applicant's proposing to change that just to be as it's shown here in the drawings. So that's the only change there.
So maybe Mr. Shannon, only because he might know. On the road that comes out of this development right in front of Quezon Court right there, is that coming out of the driveway? I don't have a map, and I think it would have been nice if we could have had one to at least see what you guys see.
I believe he's talking about the exit driveway out of the Jack in the Box. Onto Portola Road.
Onto Portola, correct.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's going to come out of Jack in the Box?
Mm-hmm.
Driveway? Thing on the corner of where you come off of the exit that's filled with water right now because it's raining?
Correct.
Is that going to stay there?
Yes.
It's going to be permanent?
It's required.
Is there going to be a fence, any type of a fence or anything put around it to keep children out? For safety reasons?
There's nothing at this point that's been conditioned to do that.
Because there's water in it in the summer also, and it gets warm, as you well know, in Atascadero, and I just thought it would be a safety hazard not to have anything around it.
Okay.
Okay. I would appreciate that.
Drainage basin. And that's by the Jack in the Box. Okay.
It's on the corner as you come around off of 101 South off of Santa Rosa. It's right there in front of you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anything else?
Is there a way that we can get a copy of that map that you guys are looking at?
It's available online. We have the whole staff report with all the maps online.
Okay, I would just go to?
Atascadero.org, or we have copies at City Hall if you want to come in
great.
And get a copy.
Okay. And the drainage from that division, all of that, has its own drainage out someplace else? It's not going to come?
Well, there's a drainage catch basin in the residential area, and there's also this drainage catch basin, and there's a couple more small ones along the edge of
It's all contained within that area?
Yes.
All right. Yes. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Okay. Is there anyone? Step to the microphone, please.
My name is Mary Neal. I live at 8985 Kaysen Court. I've never done this before, and I don't know if this is the right time to be bringing this up, but I've written a letter. It's to you and to Mr. Shannon, Rossetti, and Shores. My name is Mary Neal. I moved from Morro Bay to 8985 Kaysen Court in Atascadero in November of 2008. Big mistake. I can tell you from firsthand experience that I live in the absolute worst location in regards to your project at 9000 West Front Road, a.k.a. West Front Village. I was trying to look up the history on this project, and it seems that it goes to not even know how loud their exhaust is, or maybe just don't care. I realize that at this point it is not your fault that this situation is what it is. I also realize that most people do not make loud noise intentionally to make others unhappy. My fear is that when your current plans for development, the traffic situation will intensify and become even more unbearable for homeowners. When I looked at this house, I was aware of the freeway off-ramp. I felt that with the double-pane windows and short brick wall, the noise would be bearable. That was another big mistake on my part. Of course, looking at a house in daylight for such a short amount of time is not a real indication of the noise. Also, never having lived on such a street did not make me even think about the noise at night. I currently try to sleep with three fans going all night and also wear earplugs. I can still hear the noise. The constant of the freeway is bearable. It is the stopping and putting the pedal to the metal is what is disturbing. What I'm requesting is that some consideration be shown for me and anyone else that may be trying to live and sleep in this house. I say house because I am so unhappy with buying this house that it does not feel like a home. Perhaps a tall brick fence alongside of the house to help with the noise. I am a single woman with a single income, and just trying to landscape this property has become a financial struggle. Adding a fence or a brick wall is really out of the budget for me. Please take my request seriously. This house of mine is not a place of refuge or tranquility. I actually hate coming home, and when I see the off-ramp, sometimes I just want to keep driving. Selling this house at this point is not an option. Besides, I would not want to sell it to someone without telling the truth about the noise. And also, I do live in one of those low-income affordable houses, and I live on the end, which is, you can tell, and it probably is one of the nicer houses on the block, and I'm trying very hard to keep it very nice and not get into that, you know, whatever you're saying about low-income people, but I would appreciate any consideration, and I hope this was the right place to bring this up. Thank you.
You're welcome, Ms. Moore. You're welcome. Any other? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the commission. Close the public hearing. and close the public hearing. Okay. What I'd like to do, is there any follow-up questions of the applicant at this time?
Well, I have a comment. I think staff has put together a really quite a thorough report, has offered alternatives. I agree with everything that they would like to do, and I also feel that those three items that Mr. Shannon brought up should be, he should make that presentation before the city council. But I don't think that we can say one way or the other whether or not we think that they're warranted. I do think that the council has the ability to change it. We don't have the ability to change it. So I think you could go ahead and move with the three resolutions with all of the conditions that are currently in the staff report, plus the ones that they brought up tonight, plus the three items from Richard Shannon. And that would be the end of it.
Okay. Excuse me, I forgot. I wanted to see if there was any feedback on Ms. Neal's concern there. I don't know where this, I did not look at the property. Is this right across from, are you familiar, Warren, where this is?
Yeah, it sounds like it's probably the house at the corner of Caseland Court. There is a house right there at the end. It is at the corner. It is at the end of the off-ramp. It is a spot that would be subject to some noise impacts, obviously, from all the turning movements and that sort of thing.
And this development's going to increase the impact on that, is it not?
It will have a impact, obviously, the additional uses there, the commercial uses will draw some additional traffic. We wouldn't consider it significantly more than what the current level is. The roads are designed to accommodate it, but there will be an incremental increase.
Is there anything within our purview that we could explore? I don't mean to make this more complicated than it is, but the young lady does have a concern.
I don't believe you'd have any direct nexus where this project, obviously it's a condition that already exists, so
okay.
This project would have to fix.
What's before us with respect to Mr. Shannon's points, I think it's clear that he's prepared to accept most of the conditions that the staff is proposing. He's raised 3 points. And as I understand it, and maybe you can correct me if I'm off base here, as I understand it, we're being asked to suggest or to propose to the city council that they consider making an exception to their policy with respect to the clustering of affordable housing with respect to this project.
Correct.
So we are being asked to suggest to the city council that they
consider
to recommend. Yes.
Yes.
No.
That's
right. Mr. Shannon,
the applicant has asked that.
The commission hasn't voted on it yet.
No.
So it doesn't.
No.
He's asking us to do that, I think, or to consider this.
Correct.
And he's asking us likewise to consider making a recommendation with respect to the landscaping item. And with respect to combining in-lieu fees and housing compliance with respect to affordable housing requirements.
And the continuance of the deferred agreement.
That's right. And on those items, I would like to be able to ask some questions about to the staff about their reaction to his proposal and what they... You know what considerations apply here that we should take into account before in determining whether to make the recommendations that he's requesting.
Well, I think what we basically are looking at is the three different resolutions and what they cover. And it is our, if there's some specific clarification that we need from Director Frace, we can do that. So if you have a specific question that you would like to ask him,
all right,
right ahead.
Yes, I do. Thank you. Now, with respect to the landscaping, you heard from Mr. Shannon that he's been told by his...
I talked to the city attorney about it. I haven't really... We've talked about this a couple times with the applicant, so we do know that the CCNRs are already recorded. It is my understanding that there is some provisions about the landscape maintenance timing, so I understand that that is an issue and a problem on the project, and those parcels that are already sold off beyond their control, probably is no ability to go back and change that. That makes sense. I think, you know, we're just kind of stuck in a spot where the idea was to, you know, clean up the appearance of this interchange because this was a tourist-serving type use. Originally, we thought the 2 years would be fine because we were talking about some larger plant material in the Caltrans right-of-way. That doesn't work out. Now we're to a point where it's kind of a narrow strip. Our Public Works Department is reluctant to assume a maintenance responsibility there. Obviously, if we use a drought-tolerant plant, something that naturalizes, that will minimize the maintenance responsibility, but it doesn't necessarily go away. There's always, you know, some maintenance requirement there. I think ultimately, you know, it is probably a city council, you know, policy decision. They're really maintenance, you know, the funding of maintenance throughout the community is a city council priority issue. They probably have the best ability to make the call one way or the other on it. I think, you know, if the commission, you may just want to recommend that the council, you know, look at this issue in more detail without making a specific recommendation, and we can work with the applicant maybe to come up with something that we can run by Public Works before that meeting, see if we can come up with something that looks like it might work with a shorter maintenance period.
But we also could recommend that consideration be given. The city council has a better handle on the costs and expenses, and it's out of our jurisdictions, but a recommendation to at least look at it and see if there was any alternative that could be worked out on this.
Yeah, you could even maybe just make more of a broad recommendation that the staff and applicant look at some alternatives to present to the council. Okay. Without amending the condition or necessarily endorsing it, just kind of, you know, direct us to, you know, do a little bit of homework first.
So okay. What I'm hearing is the possibility that you might be able to work this out even before it hits the city council, and they'll be spared having to deal with it. Is that what you're suggesting?
I doubt we're going to work
hard to clustering the housing, and that it's. It seems to me it's probably beyond our province to second guess that, and certainly we don't have the opportunity here to conduct the kind of inquiry that the city council did in formulating a policy, so there's really not much we can add to that. But we can, I guess, suggest to the city council that it look at the possibility of making an exception here. Is that
correct?
Is that your understanding, Warren, of what we can do?
Clearly, you can make whatever recommendations you want. Staff is recommending that the commission stick with the existing council policy because, like you said, there was a lot of time and effort and a lot of projects that have been processed under it, including this one previously. So this is actually an adopted condition already applied to this project from 2005.
Does staff ever suggest making exceptions when there is a general policy like the city council has here, and you look at a particular case and you think that there might be some hardship or some issues that make it a little different from the general case to which the general policy applies? Do you ever find yourself in those situations and you recommend making an exception?
Occasionally we do.
But you're not doing that here, is that right?
No, and I'll go back to the fact that this is a this project's already approved. The council's already approved it with this condition on it. So the council's already looked at this, and this is what they decided was an appropriate condition for the project. So that's where I think staff-wise, you know, staff's not comfortable encouraging or recommending that we deviate. The council may decide that conditions have changed and they want to take a fresh look at it, but they'll have that opportunity when it's before them.
And when the council looked at it, these were all duplex units at that point. And was the market, the real estate market, or the housing market, different materially from what it is now?
It was at the peak.
Yes. Okay, Commissioner Benz?
Yes. Warren, there's nothing to prevent Richard Shannon from making the same presentation at the City Council public hearing that he made here tonight, correct?
Correct.
And so what's before us is what is clearly stated at a City Council policy, and the City Council is the only one that has the authority to modify or change that. So
anyone else? Okay.
I'd also like to ask about
Commissioner,
the combination of the, yes, thank you, Chairman Jack, about the combination of the housing and in-lieu fees. That, too, is something which the council can be, or needs to address, I guess. We can't do anything about that either, right?
Yeah, that's an exception from the policy that has to be granted by the council. So I think that's one you really probably just steer clear of.
And the staff is not recommending an exception on that either?
Well, we kind of first heard about it this afternoon, so we haven't had a chance really to think about it.
So really, the out of those items that Mr. Shannon was indicating, we could maybe do something on recommending something more exploring other alternatives on the landscaping and continue the deferral?
The deferral agreement has to do with the timing of the facility district, and that is a condition that is on both the master plan and the map.
Okay.
It's a standard condition, so we require that these facility districts be created before the maps record, because once the maps record and you have multiple lots, you can sell them to different people, and it's difficult, could be almost impossible, kind of like this issue with the landscape maintenance, then to get everybody to agree to this taxing district. Nobody ever wants to vote for that later.
Exactly.
So that's why the condition's written the way it is, where that facility district has to be created before the final map is recorded or concurrent with that. The applicant's right, though. As soon as you create the facility district, you have to start paying into it before you sell the houses, and that can be fairly expensive to do. On this project, because of the timing of the hotel and the timing of the map, we have entered into a deferral agreement which allowed this community facility district to be deferred to a certain point. I'm not clear exactly what the current trigger or timeline in terms of when it has to be recorded is. Now, this map, like Callie said earlier, isn't an amendment. This is a brand new standalone map. I think what I'd recommend is we leave the condition the way it is. We have done deferral agreements on.
Okay. Okay. Does anybody want to?
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion if it's appropriate.
Any more discussion? No. Go.
Did you ask whether anyone wanted discussion first? Was that what I heard? Because there's something I'd like to try
okay.
to clarify.
Okay. Go right ahead.
If we were to say something to the effect that we recommend that the City Council consider making an exception in this case with respect to, let's say, affordable housing, does that carry with it the implication that we're saying that an exception should be made in this case, or only that it should be considered? I guess that's what I'm new to this, and I'm wondering what the significance of doing that is.
The City Council will take into consideration whatever we recommend, and they'll put the appropriate weight to that recommendation. Commissioner Benz, you want to add to that?
The city council sets policy, and the city council adopts ordinances and zoning codes and the requirements for maps and all that stuff. And our job is to uphold their decisions, not to challenge the decisions necessarily, but to uphold those decisions.
And nobody's implying that a decision should be challenged, but only that is this redundant? I mean, is the city council going to consider making an exception irrespective of whether we recommend it? I mean, does it really matter?
That's their prerogative, not ours.
I have no way of knowing what they're going to do. It's their prerogative. They will listen. They will take everything into consideration that we recommend, and then they will weigh it based upon their perception and where they're at, how they want to, if they're in a position to make any of the changes that the applicant has asked. But they do pay attention and they do give our recommendations due consideration. So the recommendations should not be made lightly.
Well, based on that, I guess I would say that my inclination would be to recommend that the city council consider looking carefully at the city council that has that jurisdiction and has the requisite institutional knowledge to reach a decision on.
Okay. Commissioner Benz?
Yes. I know where Commissioner Colomarino is coming from. I may even be sympathetic to what Richard Shannon wants to do. But if he makes his presentation to the city council, then the city council will make the determination of whether or not they want to do any of those things that he has requested. And I'm sure he's prepared to make that same presentation to the council, and that we shouldn't second guess the council. The only thing we should do is present to the council a recommendation based on what is before us tonight. And I'm ready to make a motion to even include something that Mr. Shannon has said, but in a different tone and a different method than what you're proposing.
Why don't we let Mr. Commissioner Benz go ahead, make the motion, go through that process, and then we can have discussion for any possible amendments or changes.
I would like to clarify the record, though, with respect to the characterization of what I'm proposing is second-guessing. I'm not suggesting second-guessing the city council. Far from it. I mean, they haven't rendered a decision on this particular case yet, and all I'm suggesting is that we highlight for them this our perception that there is an issue here, and it's not for something an issue for us to decide, but something that we want to highlight for them.
Okay.
Commissioner Benz?
My response is that the city council will hear the same thing that we heard, and they will make the decision, and it's not for us to tell them one way or the other what their decision should be.
I'd like to weigh in just a minute, because I do not have a problem making a recommendation to the city council that they give consideration, a serious consideration to this, particularly since it has been that has been accommodated in the past. They're not bound by what we recommend, but I think I could support something of that nature. Commissioner Ward?
Yes, I'd like to chime in on this. Is it possible? I'm a new guy on the block here, but
I
think it would be very helpful if each of us could give sort of our views on this one issue, not every other. I mean, is there a formula for dispersing them? But what I'm hearing is that if they have to be dispersed, they're not going to change the design of the project. They're just going to designate a couple of others across the street, maybe a little bigger unit, as affordable. But that the key issue is one of just pure economics and the maintenance and all that. So I would like to hear sort of a sense of however commissioner feels about this, and I also feel that it's our responsibility to make a recommendation to the city council. That doesn't mean they're going to do it, but I think we could
Come up with a recommendation. And that's kind of what we're doing at this point in time, right, is the discussion. And as soon as you have completed yours, then Commissioner Marino would like to chime in also. So we'll go through and have that discussion.
Good.
So, Commissioner Marino?
If we're to have that discussion, I would say numbers 1 and 3, that he's talking about the landscaping and the deferral agreement. I'm all for recommending that the council take a look at that. When it comes to the affordable housing, the issue that I have with clustering the units, as Commissioner Benz had talked about, if they were owned units, if they were sold, that might be one thing. If they become rentals, that could be another, because you don't have as much of the sense of the pride of ownership and that type of thing. So if you end up with sort of six rentals on the end, and what could happen with that versus rentals being spaced, and I understand the issue of cost. I mean, I've been on that property. It's not a huge property where I think, somebody's running, 1 mile one direction, 1 mile another to do the landscaping. So I don't see that being a huge issue. In terms of the mixing the housing in with the in-lieu fees, I have no problem with that.
The as far as there's a set of CC&Rs that will control, will exercise some control over the look and appearance of all of the units within the complex. So from that aspect, it might be a way of mitigating some of what your concerns are.
Probably not with the rental issue.
Okay.
But that's why I would have a concern with clustering, is if you don't know if they're going to be owner versus rental, I have an issue with the clustering.
Okay.
Or if it's just flat out across the board, they want it to be, no clustering no matter what, or, what I'm saying, a little more, a little clearer, a little more specific.
Okay.
If I understand correctly, that did Warren say that they had looked at this project and this applied this to this project? Did I understand that correctly?
Yeah, this is a previously approved project, so
yep.
This condition
okay.
just carried over
okay,
from the
well,
original approval.
Well, maybe just for future, for less confusion, maybe if we had some, if they want to, just recommend if there could be more specifics. That's all.
Okay. I think at this point, could we at least on the clustering concept get kind of a sense of where everybody's at for the clustering or against the clustering, making a recommendation?
I'd like to make a comment in regards to the clustering.
Okay.
Commissioner Marino brought up a good point. It's possible that those six units could be owned by absentee owners and rented. And all of that has to be handled when the sale was made or when the units are being rented. The city has to have regulations in place that allow city staff to go out and determine whether the rent is being charged is for low or moderate or very low income, and whether it complies and the owner his ownership is conditioned upon that remaining as a low and moderate income housing unit. Whether it's owned by the person or whether the person is just renting it, it's still a low and moderate income housing. So there's a lot of issues that have to be addressed on this. And I don't think it's a question of clustering. The city council understands clustering, and when Richard presents it to the city council, they'll look at it and they'll decide maybe that they should do it or not do it. But I don't mind saying that it was brought up at this meeting, and that the commission thinks that the city council should give consideration to these items, but
okay.
I don't think it should go any further than that.
No, I'm in agreement. I would buy into that kind of an approach on it.
So I'm prepared to make a motion to that effect.
Okay.
If there's not any more discussion.
I have another comment. If unpleasant environment or an environment that becomes stigmatized within the community, but we're only talking about a small number of units here. We also are dealing with a housing market that's very troubled right now, and I would support a statement that said something to the effect that in view of the limited size of this project and the conditions prevailing in the housing market now, the commission suggests or recommends that the council consider whether strict application of its clustering requirement is warranted in this case. Something to that effect.
I'd like to soften that a little bit, but we're kind of all saying the same thing, that the recommendation that they take into consideration making an exception here is essentially about all that I want to say. So at that point, are we in? Can Mr. Benz make his motion? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the commission adopt resolution PC 2009-0005, recommending that the city council introduce an ordinance for first reading by title only to approve zone code text change 2009-0152, PLN 2009-0997, amending the PD 23 overlay district text consistent with the revised project design based on findings, and resolution number PC 2009-0006, recommending that the city council approve master plan of development amendment CUP 2003-0108, amendment PLN 2099-0997, based on findings and subject to conditions of approval and mitigation monitoring, and resolution number PC 2009-0007, recommending that the city council approve a tentative tract map for tract 2970 PLN 2099-0997, based on findings and subject to conditions of approval and mitigation monitoring, including the changes to the conditions of approval submitted by staff at this meeting. And
okay. Commissioner Benz has made a motion, seconded by Commissioner Marino. Suzanne, could we have a roll call, please?
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Benz?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturtevant?
Yes.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Chairperson Jack?
Yes.
Motion passes 6-0-1.
Thank you, Suzanne. Could we recall? Commissioner Schmidt, would you please join us? Okay, are there any comments or reports from any of the commissioners? Okay. You have one? You've been out dreaming something up, huh? Okay. Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes, in the consent item tonight, we voted to extend a tentative map. And for those who don't know, when maps are approved, the state law says that they have a life of 5 years to record, mm-hmm. Or they expire. Typically, the policies of most agencies are, upon approval, you get the first 2 years, and then subsequent one-year extensions, 3 one-year extensions after that for a total of 5 years. I was looking at the MAP Act, and there's nothing in the MAP Act that says that an agency couldn't approve an extension for an extended period of time, more than 1 year. You could give the 3 years. I looked at the city's subdivision ordinance, And in fact, the subdivision ordinance just replicated the language in the Subdivision Map Act. And so I was interested in finding out if other commission members would consider maybe recommending to the city council to visit this issue, or in some way let staff know that someone could apply for a time extension beyond 1 year of time. And is Warren, is there, how do you guys approach more?
I think it's in the range of $400 for a time extension.
So it's quite high. Yeah. Well, it would be helpful to know, you know, if an applicant could apply for an extension beyond the 1 year, pay the $400 fee one time versus three of those, or $1,200. And
especially during this particular time.
So I'd like to investigate that.
Is there a consensus to do so?
Is this a matter that would have to be agendized?
It's not on the agenda.
It's not on the agenda, but if we can sense that it's something we want to look at, revisit, then
we could agendize it.
Then
for the
we
next
could
meeting.
Agendize it. Yes, that's exactly right. Okay, so Warren, could we do that?
Yeah. Yeah, we're probably not going to get that on your next agenda because
no, I understand.
We'll need a couple weeks just to research it.
Sure, sure.
Thank you.
Any other comments? At this point, Mr. Frace, your director's report.
Yes, thank you. Your next agenda is scheduled for March 3rd. Right now we're looking at the Tractor Supply Hardware project. At Dove Creek is likely going to be on that agenda. We did hold a neighborhood meeting a couple weeks ago. We had about 70 people from the public show up, so there's a lot of neighborhood interest in the Dove Creek development about this project. We've been working with the applicant to try to get those issues addressed, but we expect we'll have a very healthy turnout for that next meeting, so just don't be too surprised if all the chairs are full. Okay. The Planners Institute is scheduled for March 25th through the 27th. Right now, it's my understanding that all the commissioners will be attending. Right. So, and that is working on getting all the reservations and everything in place. So if there's any changes, anybody can't make it, let us know. Otherwise, we're going to move forward on that. We'll probably put that on the agenda for discussion on the 17th, just so we can talk about logistics and things like that.
And Mr. Commissioner Colomarino is included in that, correct?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
He is all dialed in. And I